Good evening, you all. This is the TechNet number 1292 of the series that began in 1972. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. You'll also hear Kilo 2 Kilo Echo Yankee. His name is Mel. Mel and Dick tried to moderate. We think we're moderate people. We try to moderate this thing called the TechNet. Sometimes it gets a little bit wild, particularly when we get on certain subjects where people have an emotional response to them. Major purpose of TechNet is education. We try to help each other understand how all of this complicated hardware works. You really want to teach a person how wireless equipment works. You give them a ham radio license and let them start tinkering with it. There's ample evidence that that's the fastest way and the most fun way of getting hands-on experience with radio. We discuss things like antennas and propagation and transmitters and receivers and favorite rigs and methods of making modification of them, whatever. Mel and Dick try to gather the clan on Sunday nights, and there's an awful lot of brain power in the area that this repeater covers, which is approximately northern New Jersey, southern New York, and southwestern Connecticut. And hopefully when a particular subject comes up, somebody listening to the TechNet says, aha, I know something about that. He chimes in and gives you the benefit of his experience and his knowledge. So it's a collective effort, as you can tell. I also got to give you a little bit of a warning. Mel and Dick do the best they can to be accurate, but nobody bats a thousand. Occasionally we make some errors. And a realistic engineer knows that everybody has a certain hit ratio, as I call it. Never 100%. A realistic engineer will occasionally...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Now, there's one of the things you're not supposed to do. I'm setting a bad example. We're all supposed to watch our watch roughly every minute and a quarter. We're supposed to do an interruption and wait a couple of seconds beyond the beep just to make sure that everything in the machine gets reset. But as I was starting to say, every engineer has a certain hit ratio, is what I used to call it. Occasionally, you're going to make an error. A realistic engineer will do the best he can to avoid the error, to consider it a lesson learned. And I've met certain kinds of engineers that will spend the rest of their life defending what they did as if there's no possibility of an error. That's not realistic. A more objective person will say, yes, I've made an error in that case. We used the best data we had, and we didn't hit the target completely on that one. So you're going to occasionally hear some errors. And hopefully, this is sort of like a peer-reviewed journal, so to speak. When those errors occur, Mel and Dick get some email real fast, and as soon as we can, we'll correct those errors. On top of that, when it comes to the main method of operation of the net, let me drop. It is a verbal exchange among the people who are present that particular night. That's the way the majority of the data flows. By way of emails and written communication, because I, for one, type very slowly compared to how fast I can talk, I don't answer a great number of emails. Mel does. He's willing to make that dedication, particularly when it comes to people who find us by way of a scanner, or they find us by way of word of mouth, and they want to get into ham radio. We try our darndest to help them out. We're not offering a written consulting service free of charge. That's not our purpose. It's not the intent. There are people who pay us the nicest compliment in the world. They'll mail us their doctoral thesis and want it reviewed. We haven't volunteered to do that. That's way beyond the call. Okay, a person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. Give me your call letters right now. We've got Bill so far. K2RIW listening.
November to X-ray, Juliet, November. Wesley, yes.
About an upcoming event, over.
Wesley recognized, and who was the upcoming event? Give me that one again.
K2GJE.
Mr. GJE, your name is, and what's the name of the upcoming event?
Handle is Ed. The upcoming event is Long Island Radio and TV Day. Over.
Okay. So we've got so far. Delta Ed and Wesley. Got the last one out of order. Who else checked in? Give me your call letters at this time.
This is N2RQ. Yes.
N2KEY. Good evening, all.
WS2N, space report, Paul. Good evening, Nick.
Okay, we've got Mel, Paul, and RQ. A terrible name, as you can tell. I know him so darn well. Oh, why can't I think of Lou's name? I thought of Lou's name. With a little bit of help. Sounds like Lou's got a real question. It's about time. Alrighty, one last call. I think I heard a man from New Jersey. Want to give that one again? The signal was a little bit weak. K2LAW.
WB2QZZ with an upcoming event.
Well recognized. And who is the man from New Jersey?
Mark, over.
Okay, very, very nosy. I heard the word Mark. What call letters and name? No, what call letters came before that? Dropout. We heard number 2, Foxtrot, Tango, Uniform. What's the prefix, please? A mark?
Okay, we got Kilo, Charlie 2, Foxtrot,
Mark. Okay, Mark, we got enough to piece it all together. Kilo, Charlie 2, Foxtrot, Tango, Uniform. I hope the man, well, when we get down to you, I hope the band is in better condition. You were there roughly 40% of the time. Lots of dropouts, so it's going to be a little bit difficult. Got more than enough to get started. Bill was the first one. The first Bill was KC2 Sierra Yankee Lima. Go right ahead, Bill. K2LAW. And my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. Good evening to the net. The name is Bill here, northeastern Queens, not too far from the Throgs Neck Bridge. I was doing some reading the last several days, and I understand there's something going to happen with Earth, Moon, Earth communications via dish in, I believe it's in Puerto Rico. I was just wondering how, you know, a basic amateur could participate in that without a lot of equipment, basically with a handheld and a mag-mount antenna. From the reading I did, I may need to have a Yagi in order to participate in that, but I was just wondering if anyone on the net could clue me in on that to at least try some experiments. This is KC2SYO, the name is Bill, back to net.
QGZ. Bill recognized. Mr. QGZ, do you want to answer that one? I've got a lot of information also, but you go first. Go ahead, Bill.
Same topic I had. Apparently Arecibo is going to illuminate the moon on 432 this upcoming weekend. And the dates and times as follows. It's April 16th, 1645 to 1930 UTC. The 17th, 1740 to 2020 UTC. And the 18th, 1840 to 2125 UTC. And they're going to be transmitting on 432.045. Now, from what I read of their emails with a fellow who's running it, he indicates that a 15 dB antenna, or he said a small Yagi, should be sufficient to receive them with a decent low noise front end. So my plan is to go out and you know, point my Yagi at the moon and listen up and see what I see. Back to you.
Very fine. And glad to have that information, Bill QGZ. The amount of power that's going to be applied to the Arecibo dish is 400 watts. The dish itself at 432 megacycles has a gain of very close to 60 decibels. If you convert 60 decibels back to a real number, it's really 10 to the 6th power, because your decibels mean deci, tenth of a bell. You multiply by 10 if you take the log. So it's a 1,000,000 to 1 power ratio between the number of watts you put into that Arecibo dish. That dish is 1 mile in diameter in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. And that particular dish, you can't move the dish. It's a spherical dish instead of a parabolic. And they got a fancy feed on that corrects for all that. Let me drop. And the nice thing about not a spherical dish is that you can steer the beam by moving the horn. That's the good news. The bad news is you can only steer it a few degrees away from straight up, because you can only move the feed horn a certain amount before it starts defocusing. So as the moon sweeps by the Earth at roughly 14.5 degrees per hour, you get a couple of hours of look time if the moon happens to be passing straight overhead of Arecibo, which it does on certain days of every single month. So it's a nice ballet going on here between where the moon is, where the dish can be aimed, and whether or not they get some available time. And the ham radio operators down there, used to be Sam Harris, was the ham radio operator at Arecibo that did some of these early moon bounce tests. With 60 decibels of gain, the million-to-one ratio, and 400 watts going into it, the effective radiated power out of the dish is 400 million watts. In other words, you stand off at a far enough distance that you're really seeing the pattern of that antenna, and whether or not somebody puts 400 watts into that particular dish or puts 400 million watts into an isotropic antenna, one that acts like a light bulb, well, far enough distance, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. That's what effective isotropic radiated power means. The good news is that with that amount of power, let me drop, you now have the ability to listen to that signal in Morse code and maybe in sideband. And with a handheld Yagi, a 432 megacycle Yagi, the one that I designed way back in 1978, had 19 elements to it. It was 13 feet long, but it weighed about a pound. So to hand-hold a Yagi and aim it at the moon is a definite possibility. It's nice to have a low-noise receiver preamp, and it should be a single sideband-type receiver. I think the chances of listening to FM off the moon, if they were transmitting that mode, and they're not, would be quite a bit more marginal unless you had a little bit more antenna. The difference between the weakest signal you can detect with a single sideband receiver and the weakest signal you can detect with an FM receiver, lots of dBs of difference there. Probably 15 or 20 dB of difference, maybe even more. So a single Yagi, handheld, aimed at the moon, assuming you can see the moon, and if not, you'll have to calculate ahead of time where it's going to be from your particular location, into a receiver. You'll hear the Morse code of people doing the QSOs. There's a catch, though. Let me drop. And that is, it's going to be a two-way conversation back and forth between the normal moonbound operators and the Arecibo dish. When Arecibo's doing the talking, they're going to be nice and loud. You're going to hear them. You could probably, we can go through the calculations. In fact, I can help you with those calculations. A round trip to the moon and back is roughly 261 dB, maybe it's 263. My memory's a little foggy on this one. But once you know the number of decibels of loss, let's assume it's 260 and 2, we'll round off the numbers. And if you know the amount of gain of your antenna, and you know the amount of power that they're transmitting, you plug in those numbers, and you find out how strong will the signal be to you, and there's ways of calculating what is the minimum discernible signal in the Morse code mode that your receiver on 432 megacycles, a sideband receiver, how weak it should be able to hear, and whether or not you got the right number of decibels of a threshold there. Let me drop.
Two people.
But it's a...
Dick?
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, just sorry to interrupt you. WHCDL. Just to mention, the link between the repeaters is dropping out. You may have to wait when you unkey, even though there's no second or third beep that you're going to hear. Wait 5 seconds before you rekey, because it looks like the link is dropping, it's timing out. Dick, go ahead.
Yeah, when I drove home on Thursday and Friday, Andy, I noticed that anyone who was on the 8.5 machine had a certain length of time that they could be heard on the 375, the Eastern Link, and then the Eastern Link, without warning, would just suddenly go dead, so to speak. And it went dead for X number of minutes and then came back again. So I think you're saying there's a normal timeout as people use the 8.5. And then, to your knowledge, is there a certain length of time in which it comes back, or is somebody always resetting it? Over to you, Andy.
All right, sorry to interrupt your discussion. When it drops out without giving a timeout warning, that we normally say repeater timeout, it looks like it's the link that's dropping, because once it drops out, I can then rekey the repeater, and the repeater will key up from my location. This is the east repeater, but there's no link connection, so the repeater is standalone, and then it comes back by itself a few seconds after that. I'm just making this determination now as I go on, but not to interrupt you. Go ahead with your discussion, just letting you know that it is dropping, and we'll have to look into this.
KB1CHM checking in.
Did I hear Kilo Bravo 1 Golf Hotel Mike? Correct me on that. And also give me your name, sir.
Tango Hotel Mike. My name is Brandon. I'm here in Easton, Connecticut.
Very fine, Brandon. Been hearing quite a bit about you lately. And on a quick break, Brandon, so we know how fast we got to get back to you. How late are you allowed to stay up tonight, Brandon? Go ahead.
Probably about 9:15.
Okay, a little bit before 9 o'clock, no matter where we are, we're going to go over to Brandon. Hang in there. We'll get to you. You sound very good tonight. Good sounding signal. So you can calculate ahead of time. It's all deterministic material. Let me make sure I dropped long enough. When you know how many decibels there are lost are between a 0 dB gain antenna. By the way, 0 decibels of gain really means unity. 0 decibels is not zero signal. One of the very confusing figures. Also, decibels can be negative and positive. If you've got loss in the system, it's negative decibels. And if you've got gain in the system, it's positive decibels. And the iRecevo dish has got plus positive 60 dB of gain. Knowing ahead of time that an isotropic antenna doing the transmitting, sending a signal to the moon, most of it would miss the moon, but of that half a degree beamwidth and as an L that hits the moon itself is approximately a 7% reflector. An awful lot of the dirt absorbs the signal, scatters it in various directions, but of all the energy that hits the moon, 7% of it starts coming back to you. And then it goes through that 240,000 miles of loss between the Earth and the Moon. It comes back, and hopefully that signals above threshold for your particular receiving antenna. You can add up those decibels of a power output and gain of your antenna and figure out your effective radiated power. That's the positive decibels. You go through the minus 262 dB or so at 432, Moon and back, and then again you use the gain of your receiving antenna to boost up the signal again. So it's a up, down, down, and up, so to speak, if you're adding up the numbers of signal strength going through that path. And there's ways of doing it step by step, and there's websites that'll help you. And as you increase the gain of your transmitting antenna and receiving antenna, things get better and better, but there's a catch. Let me drop. And the catch is, the moon is half a degree wide. As your transmitting antenna, say for instance Arecibo, if they had the way of beam forming where they could change the beam width from narrow and from wide down to more narrow. In other words, there are certain kinds of flashlights we've all used where as you twist the flashlight, Maglite does one of these, you actually focus the beam. You see the beam go from wide to narrow when you look at the spot on the wall. And there's antennas that can do that. I have built and used one of those antennas on 432. That's another whole story. So as you make the antenna more and more narrow in beam width, the gain goes up, the signal gets stronger in that one direction, and more and more of your signal hits the moon. Once your antenna gets to around 52 dB, I can recalculate that number. In other words, half a degree of beam width in azimuth and elevation of your antenna. Once it gets down to that number, your total beam is now hitting the moon. As you use higher and higher gain antennas, you'd like to believe you're going to get a stronger and stronger signal coming back. Not necessarily. As you start using a higher and higher gain from that point, what you're starting to do is light up less and less of the moon. You develop a hot spot in the center of the moon. That means that the echo from the moon coming back to the Earth doesn't necessarily get stronger, but the signal gets more pure. The moon has what's called libration fading. In other words, because the moon is in a slightly elliptical orbit, because you're on the surface of the Earth, and the Earth is rotating, and if you were standing at the equator, you would be moving horizontally because of the rotation of the Earth that you're standing on at something like 1,000 miles an hour. Up here where we are in the 40-degree northern hemisphere, 40-degree latitude, we're probably moving something like 700 miles an hour. So we're moving, we're doing the transmitting and receiving, and the moon, with reference to us, does a kind of tilt back and forth very slowly. Your eye wouldn't see it, a telescope wouldn't see it. Radio sees it. The portion of the signal that hits the left-hand side of the moon tends to come back to you with positive Doppler. The part of the signal hitting the right-hand side of the moon, from your point of view, comes back with a negative Doppler, mostly because of your motion on a rotating Earth. So as you light up a smaller and smaller spot on the moon using a higher and higher gain antenna, like Arecibo, that libration fading almost disappears because you're not lighting up the edges of the moon. You're just lighting up the hot spot, the so-called sub-Earth spot. Let me drop. Therefore, a single sideband signal, and they will be using single sideband during this event. Some of the big gun signals that talk to Arecibo will say, okay, I just talked to you on Morse code. Let's switch, flip over to sideband, and I'll say a couple of paragraphs back and forth, if you know what I mean. And again, if you've got the right kind of receiving equipment, a good sideband receiver, you'll be able to hear that, and it'll be kind of fun. And so as they light up a smaller spot on the center of the moon, you get less of this libration fading. All of a sudden, single sideband begins to sound pure when Arecibo is talking, because they're just lighting up one hot spot. And this normal Doppler spread you get from the left-hand side and the right-hand side of the moon disappears. So an event like this, that's kind of fun to actually listen to the voice coming back from a quarter of a million miles away, half million mile round trip. There's some real interesting physics there. It took a long time for mankind to come up with the right kind of hardware at the tail end of World War II, where the radar systems were able to hear their own echoes. Multi-million dollar radar systems first did it, and now you and I can do it with hardware in the backyard. I know that's a little more than you asked for. Maybe it helps a little bit, Bill. By the way, one of the things that I sometimes hear is people say, hey, this guy RIW is a little bit too verbal here. It goes on a little bit too long with these explanations. I'm kind of curious, Bill, from Queens, who asked the original question, was any of that information boring to you? Should I have eliminated it? Did you want that much answer, or should I give you just a headline? KC2SYL, K2RIW on the TechNet.
This is KC2SYL. No, Dick, I understood pretty much, I think, all that you explained, and thanks for the in-depth explanation. I'm just trying to figure out if I can listen to it with Kenwood handy talkie and the MagMat antenna. Right now I don't have access to a Yagi antenna, but I may run up the MFJ catalog or look in and purchase one. But no, the explanation was fine. I think I understood all the concepts about the round trip and the spots and all that kind of stuff and the codes and the single sideband. It'd be interesting just to listen in to see if I could actually hear anything. I do have the Yaesu 817D, which I could fire up, and that, I believe, has single sideband capability on that frequency. Just one other point of etiquette in terms of how would you, if I do, in fact, can contact via that moon bounce, what is the proper etiquette in terms of signing on and trying to get a contact in the QSO? Back to that. This is KC2SYL in Queens, New York. The name is Bill.
Very fine, Bill. I think the 817 does have sideband capability. However, many rigs with 432 modules plugged in start off with about a 12 decibel noise figure. So if you don't know the noise figure of your rig, or if you do know it and it's not close to 1 decibel, that's something to worry about. And if you get down a half a decibel, that would even help even more. The solution to that, if your noise figure is too high, which really is sensitivity, by the way, is you can buy something like an Advanced Receiver Research AR2 pre-amplifier. And they come both with the automatic bypass relay inside, or just a basic pre-amplifier, if you want to install it in just the receiver line inside after the transmit-receive relay. So worry about noise figure of no matter what receiver you use. And when you talked about a handy talkie, I'm going to make a guess that it was a 450 handy talkie that is capable of going down to 432, and it runs in the FM mode. And if you've ever practiced with a single sideband, let me drop or Morse code, here we go. If you've ever played Morse code into an FM receiver, and you turn off the squelch so that the thing has maximum sensitivity, you'll hear a blast of noise. When you press down the key, the receiver becomes quiet. So what the Morse code you hear into an FM receiver is inverse Morse code. Pressing down the key is quiet, lifting up the key is noisy. And so back in the days when you had a hand key, a J38, I think those things were called, and you had that shorting bar on one side, and if you press the shorting bar up and down, instead of using the normal button for the key, you'll realize that the thing will send inverse Morse code. And if you've ever heard inverse Morse code, it takes a lot of practice to make any sense out of it. So listening with an FM receiver, it's an interesting experiment, but because of the tremendous decrease in sensitivity and the fact that it's going to give you inverse Morse code, it's going to make it a lot less pleasant, and single sideband into a FM receiver is essentially unintelligible. So I would concentrate on whatever ring you've got or can borrow that has single sideband capability. I think that was one of your questions. The etiquette, standby. When you read the right website, and there's a couple of websites that will give you the information, you'll recognize the fact that Arecibo is going to transmit on a particular frequency, and about 20 or 30 kilohertz away from that transmitting frequency is where they do the listening. You're about to ask, why do they do that offset? Well, a tremendous number of guys on the Earth in theory are going to be calling them, and if they were all on top of the transmitting frequency, the guys nearby who want to do some listening would be continuously jammed. That offset gets around that problem. So they will send the equivalent of a CQ, and then on the frequencies that you're supposed to be on, you give an answer. And most likely they'll, most of the time, pick out the strong signals first and then eventually get down to the weak signals. So if you're not a big gun, and if you, at each one of your proper times for transmitting, you send your call letters and they don't answer you, don't be discouraged. It doesn't mean that you're not getting through. It just means that you're below the noise of all those other strong guys, if you know what I mean. I think the usual protocol, and Bill, I'm going to ask you for a QGZ for a repeat on this one, for an update on this one, if you happen to know. I believe most of the 452 guys use something like a 2.5 minute time sequence. In other words, the guy who is most Western transmits for the first 2.5 minutes of starting at with the minute hand straight up on the clock, and then the next 2.5 minutes, the other guy does the transmitting. I think that's the usual protocol, but in this particular case, everybody can hear Arecibo. When they're transmitting, don't transmit. Although there have been a couple of times, let me drop, when that really smart guy, Sam Harris, W1FZJ, was capable of setting up equipment for moon bounce, which could transmit and receive simultaneously. He would transmit on one frequency, he had the right kind of filters and isolation and whatever, so that he would listen simultaneously, and he would sometimes do this in sideband. He'd say, I'm calling CQ, I'm listening on this frequency, while I'm calling CQ, answer me right now. And it was kind of fun to listen to some of those cues. So you had to flip back and forth as a person standing off to one side listening. I don't think they're going to do that on this particular mission. So if you have the ability to hear them, if you have the ability to transmit on the right frequency, and you're about to ask me how many watts required, I think that a single Yagi and 400 watts or so would be heard by them fairly easily. You're about to ask, can a typical afterburner that we have on 450 of around 100 watts and one Yagi, will they hear it? I give you an 80% chance the answer is yes. So Bill QGZ probably has some more information on all of the above. I'm going to pass it over to him. The microwave voice of Massapequa, WB2QGZ. I'll eventually get it right, Bill. K2RIW in the TechNet. Wait for the beep.
All to me, Nick.
We're going to go to Bill right after that. You've got to Bill Massapequa first.
All right, waiting for the beep. No, I don't believe there's any protocol in listening. Normally, the Western and Eastern guys doing that sort of thing, it's, you're kind of doing it in the blind once in a while, and that gives guys a good idea when to sync up and try to listen. This thing is just when they're done talking, I guess you start talking. They're talking about a receive. They'll receive your transmit. They're saying between 432.05 to 432.06 plus. I mean, the one or two emails I saw kind of said, look, spread out. They'll tune around. The only other thing that's in there is they're proposing, those folks, that 100 watts and a 15 dBi gain antenna will be usable on CW. That's what they say. And Mel, forget it. WBQ, Jason.
Maybe you didn't catch that, Mel. He said Mel, forget it. Before I pass it over to you, a 15 dBi gain antenna is around 17 or so, 16 elements. 16 elements, well-tuned Yagi, will give you 15 dBi of gain. That in 100 watts, they will hear you. If you've got a little bit less power than that, a little bit less antenna than that, don't completely give up. It's still worth a try, because they do have an extremely good hearing aid down there in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. And it's kind of fun to make this kind of a QSO, to get a return card from them. They do, they promise some real good QSOing, and it's a nice pretty card with a picture of the dish and so on. So it's a fun thing to do. After that, there's a certain kind of guy who will do this kind of a listening mode, realize how much fun it is, and he says, gee, why can't I do that myself? And he starts building up his own equipment to do it. And that is very doable. Not easy. It separates the men from the boys, but for a certain kind of guy, a very worthwhile project. There's some pluses and minuses on that. I'll tell you on the next go-around. Mel wanted to give us some words on this. K2KEY. K2LIW. Go ahead, Mel.
Hey, this is K2KEY. Well, in previous, I've been to the Yacaribos site in Puerto Rico one time. A friend of mine that time was chief engineer, took me for a little ride up there in the gondola, which was quite an experience to float 480 feet above that dish. I had asked them also, they had done somewhat of a similar test once before, and I remember asking in detail, you know, what was required, what would you look for in the return test if I was involved with it. At the time, he was saying to me, he says, if you have something between 14 and a half to about 16 dB of antenna gain, it should work, but ideally you're looking for something like about gains of somewhere around 25 dB. That's what I believe he said at the time, Dick. And also, I remember specifically that at that time what they were doing, they had a system that was actually called frequency sweeping of the local oscillator to compensate for Doppler shift. I don't know if they still could activate that, Dick. Over.
For a person who has access to astronomical data, and you know where the moon is, what time of the month and time of the day, and where you're located on the Earth, of all the Dopplers you're going to see, some of the Doppler is because the moon is in elliptical orbit, which means at any instant of time it's slowly moving away or toward the Earth at one rate. And if the moon to you is not straight overhead, if the moon is on your eastern horizon, then as you turn toward it, you're going to get positive Doppler shift. If the moon is on your western horizon, as you move away from it, you're going to get negative Doppler shift. All of these things are deterministic, calculatable, if you know what I mean. The most fun thing to do is, oh, by the way, one other thing you got to remember is when Arecibo stops transmitting and you start transmitting to them, you're already behind the eight ball as far as timing is concerned. At the speed of light, a signal going up to the moon, bouncing off the moon and coming back, comes back 2.5 seconds delayed. So you may be in QSO with them, and you're passing information back and forth, and you stop transmitting, you turn it over to them, you send the letter K, and you go back into the listening mode, and you listen and you listen. And to a guy who is excited the first time he does this, the 2.5 seconds wait, if he forgets about it, is an eternity. He hears no reply, and he says to himself, oh, heck, they didn't hear me. All of a sudden, they start responding. So keep in mind that there is this 2.5 second delay. Keep in mind that the Doppler shift is hopefully compensated for because they told you what frequency they want you to transmit on. They told you the frequency range. And because you're not transmitting back to them, let me drop. Because you're not transmitting back to them on their frequency. There was this intentional offset. You don't have to track them. Just make sure that you've chosen what you think is a good spot in the frequency region they chose you to transmit in. And when I say think you're in the right spot, you probably don't want to go dead center because everybody else is going to be there, and you're going to be under the pileup, if you know what I mean. Should you be at the upper edge, the lower edge, or the center? Those are the choice points. You probably want to roll the dice and choose some real good point somewhere else and hope that no great big gun is on your particular chosen frequency. These are some of the tricks that will help you get a response. Once you do get enthusiastic about moonbounce because of this particular experiment, eventually you're going to do what I wanted to do, and that is I want to hear my own echoes. I want to press down the key, send a quick message of a couple of seconds, go back to the receive mode, and hear the message come back to me on that 2.5 second delay line between Earth and Moon. Boy, that's a fun thing to do. There's a couple of catches here. Number one, to do it reliably, without using the computer processing modes where it prints things across the screen, WSJT type those, weak signal Joe Taylor, computer processing modes. There the signal can be so weak that your ear doesn't hear it, but the computer processing gives you a printed message across the screen. And there's controversy as to whether or not that is a valid QSO or not. But the average guy wants to hear his own echoes with his own earphones and his own ears. And what's required to do that is close to 30 decibels of gain on the transmitting and receiving antenna. For the average guy, that's about at least 8, probably 16 good Yagis of about 18, 19 elements each, 21 elements each. So somewhere between 8 and 16 Yagis. If you did it with 16 Yagis on 452, that array is approximately 20 feet wide, 20 feet high. It's a 400 square foot antenna and 1,000 watts into it. You put 1,000 watts into a 30 decibel gain antenna with a 1 decibel noise figure receiver. You will hear your own echoes, let me pick the number, 75% of the time. Let me drop. The moon, the atmosphere, the time of the day and year, what is the background noise? In other words, there are certain times of the year, certain times of the month, when the background behind the moon happens to be the center of the galaxy, which is a reasonably big noise generator. And as such, you get this background noise all around the moon, and unless your antenna has 50-some-odd dB of gain where you can put a pencil beam on the moon only, you're going to be hearing that background noise. So you're not going to hear your echoes all the time, even if you have the right amount of equipment, unless you've got a whole lot of extra decibels of a faint margin in the system, because the atmosphere can give you some effects, Faraday rotation can give you some effects, the background noise behind the moon gives you effects. Another big variable is the moon at apogee or perigee. Is the moon closest to the Earth during that portion of the month, or is it furthest from the Earth at that portion of the month when you're doing the operation? That makes a couple of decibels of difference, and that can be a tiebreaker between either having a QSO or not QSO, or hearing your own echoes and not hearing your own echoes. So you'll learn a lot about astronomy, you'll learn a lot about radio antennas, the state-of-the-art of noise figure front ends and transmitters and receivers and whatever. Moonbounce does separate the men from the boys. Let me drop. For 30 solid years, K2UIH, Kilowatt 2 Uniform Yankee Hotel, has been putting out a monthly journal called the EME News. And there, all the guys in the world are reported every single month. You can now go to a website and read it, or you can have it as a hard copy mailed to you if you give a bunch of self-addressed stamped envelopes to Alan Katz, K2UIH, who's the head of the Electrical Engineering Department at Trent, what used to be called Trenton State College. And now it's called Trenton College of Engineering or something else. They changed the name. But a fascinating guy. He's been putting out this journal for 30, or maybe now it's 31 solid years. And in there, each individual month, you will see a paragraph from each guy who did moonbounce operations that month. It goes on for about 5 pages of guys, four pages of signal reports, and 1 or 2 pages of technical information and a couple of pictures. It's a fascinating thing to read. And so Eventually, you're going to want to hear your own echoes. You want to talk to other people. And there's probably right now something in the vicinity of 100 guys worldwide capable of transmitting a moonbound signal to you. And how many of them are active in any one period of time, that keeps changing. And one last comment I'm going to make. The nice thing about moonbounce is that in theory you can talk to anybody anywhere in the world. My buddy down in Antarctica, all of a sudden I'm having trouble thinking of his call letters and name. While he's down at Antarctica, if the moon is above the horizon, he can talk to anybody on the Earth who's seeing the moon at the same time. So when it comes to VHF, UHF, 432, or 2 meter, or 1296, these are the popular bands. And a few guys are on 10 gigs doing moonbounce, and one or two guys on 24 gigs. As long as both people can see the moon at the same time, you may be separated by close to 12,000 miles on the Earth, and yet you're talking to each other with this particular medium. Most of the QSOs are very weak signal Morse code, and most of the signals are a formatted procedure, what I'm thinking of, protocol, where a valid contact consists of a full set of call letters passed in both directions, one piece of unknown information, like a signal strength report, and Rogers. And that's the full QSO. Beyond that, rag chewing off the moon, a couple of really big guns can do that in sideband. The average guy is getting very little communication. And want to drop? One of the things that you're recognizing by way of this TechNet is that when we get excited about some particular emotional subject, we can talk at close to 150 words a minute with very slow speed, super weak Morse code at something like 8 words a minute or so, and very little of that signal left comfortable to listen to. It's not a rag chewer mode. So if you're doing moonbounce, I recommend you do not do it exclusively, because we are social animals. We want to trade information. We want to talk to people. So you've got to have another mode of ham radio that's operational at your shack simultaneously so you can talk to real human beings. Because the moonbounce contact will fill up your car, you fill up your wall with some exciting-looking cards. But when it comes to real conversation and passing information back and forth, that's done by way of the EME news. It's done by way of the 20-meter nets that meet on Saturday morning where people pass information. The moonbounce mode itself is not a rag-chewer's mode. It's not a real communication mode. It's threshold communication for 95% of those guys. You get a guy who builds a 30-foot homebrew dish, and he talks to another guy with a 30-foot homebrew dish. Yeah, they send sideband back and forth, and they have a real friendly conversation. That's a rare animal. So hopefully what's your chances of actually giving this a go, Bill? And we'll be listening. We'll be quite excited about hearing from you next week or the week after as to how far you got. I wonder if I'm also after asking Bill this question. I'm going to ask Bill in Queens, and I'm going to ask Bill in Massapequa. Do we know of other people who are making the attempt? KC2 SYL, who asked a fascinating question. K2LIW in the TechNet.
This is KC2 SYL. Thanks, Dick. I just have in front of me the AARL book, and there's about 5 or 6 pages explaining Earth, Moon-Earth communications. I have it in 2008 edition, chapter 23, pages 23, starting on page 23.32. Very interesting reading. No, it's fine. I just read about it on the net, the happening, I guess it was earlier this week. And I thought I would ask this evening because it sounds pretty fascinating. And I was definitely going to give it a try. At least I'm going to listen. So if I hear something, I'll report back. This is Bill, KC2SYL, back to the net. And tips, Dick and everyone else, thanks for the info.
Okay. Good luck with that project, Bill. Fun project. WP2QGZ. Bill, I wonder if you know of other people doing it. And to my knowledge, Bill, you are above the threshold to do it. Are you thinking of giving it a try? And have you done it in the past? WB2QGZ, K2LIW.
WHQGZN. And I haven't followed it before. I was actually sort of thinking about it, and I happened to see the email posting of this event coming up, so I figured what a time to try. I do have somewhere between 100 and 200 some odd watts available. I do have at least 7 elements, so you know, it's over 3 days. I'm going to see what I can hear. If I hear it good, we'll you know, we'll give it a shot and see if I can make two-way contact. There will be a bunch of time set aside. I think, you know, if anybody is interested, can pretty much if you do a Google search for Arecibo and the 432 test or 432 schedule, it'll probably come up. There's a whole bunch of stuff online about this upcoming weekend. They are setting aside some time for high power single sideband. They are definitely setting time aside for what they refer to as QRP. Anybody with less than 100 watts, setting aside time for low power stations, and time permitting, they're going to do some WSJT or something like that. And they'll announce it. I think they're starting the top of the hour with sideband is the plan. And then as they run out of folks to talk to, then they go on to CLU. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people who are going to give it a try because it is pretty well publicized. So hoping if I try to talk back, they can pick me out. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm half tempted to visit you when you go and make the attempt. I'd like to watch it take place. I don't have an antenna right now, which is a sad state of affairs. If you go to the March issue of CQ Ham Radio Magazine, and most good libraries have got past issues, you look at the March 2008 issue, and I think it's on page 34, there's an article about T2RIW, which shows a picture of his antenna with him standing in the middle of it, 16 Yagis. Yes, that antenna is mounted on the top of a 100-foot tower. You don't need the 100-foot tower. You can put those 16 Yagis on a tripod on the ground, and many guys do that, as long as it clears the trees. And that's another thing you got to worry about. Any of the side lobes of your antenna looking at hot trees are going to change your signal-to-noise ratio a little bit. It's one of the fine details you got to worry about. Also in that article, you'll see antenna patterns of that particular antenna. You'll see the pencil beam that, in theory, I use that to aim at the moon. And I did hear my own echoes with that antenna, not very reliably. I only had 700 or so watts out of the transmitter. I had a couple of dB of feed line loss, and I had a horrible noise figure on that particular system. Let me drop. As I said, I thought we had something like a 7 or 8 dB noise figure on the receiver. So that was by modern standards, it had a state-of-the-art antenna, a really yucky receiver front end, and not quite enough transmitter power to reliably hear my own echoes. And I only heard my own echoes a few percent of the time with that antenna. Also, I never got around to installing the elevation control, so I could only hear my echoes when the moon was on the horizon. But that shows you the size of antenna to comfortably do moon bounce by modern standards. A couple of Yagis on the chimney of the house with 100 watts into it with the modern computer techniques will also do it, and you'll make use of those with other guys using that the weak signal Joe Taylor type modes. That's the good news. The bad news is that an awful lot of that is being done by the computer, printed across the screen. A human being is not directly involved. It's not your own hearing system, and therefore some people will say, gee, that's cheating. Well, it's modern-day techniques. Now, because Brandon has to leave us, let me reverse the order a little bit here. Brandon's going to be going to bed pretty soon, and he was sounding real good, but let me pick him up right now. Kilo Bravo 1, Tango Hotel Mike. You got it, Brandon. You're allowed to ask any question you want. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Okay, this is KB1THM. I was trying to listen on the Eastern Link because the W1HDN repeater here is really interfering, but it keeps timing out. Is there an Echo Link node I can go on, and then I can ask the question?
Yeah, right now you're sounding good to us, but I get the impression you're probably having trouble hearing us. And so let's see if Andy is available to answer that question. W2CDL. I wonder if you heard that and can give Brandon an answer. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, they're working on the problem right now. So just bear with us. There is a dropout occurring on the east link. And that's being worked on as we speak. Go ahead.
Okay, one further question, Andy. Do you recommend that I wait a few minutes and then come back to Brandon while you guys get a chance to fix that up, or do you think you're close enough that Brandon will have some reliability on the Eastern Link at this time? Over to you, Andy.
No, just continue the discussion as you've been doing. This may take some time to resolve, and we don't want to just interrupt the TechNet all night. Just continue with, and we'll go from there. Thanks, Dick, WHCDM.
K2RIW, this is
KC2,
WYP.
WYP, recognized. WYP, are you signing in and want to go on the list, or do you have some words for the subject of discussion right now? Go ahead.
Hey, Dick, I did not have a question, but you told me to check in or, you know, contact you, so when my new antenna was set up, so I just wanted to let you know that I am using my my new quarter-wave ground plane antenna.
Would this be Skyler?
Yes, it would.
Okay, a bunch of guys were giving you all kinds of hints as to build that ground plane antenna with a SO239 and pieces of copper and whatever. Sounds like it's working very well. I'm going to want to come back to you real soon. Let me go over to Brandon right now. Brandon, make a judgment. Do you think you're hearing me well enough right now, or maybe you can flip over periodically to the 375 machine and pass your question to us and therefore get the answer you're looking for? You be the judge, Brandon. Should we do it right now, or should we delay a few minutes and then try again? KB1, Tango Hotel Mike, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, I'm able to make you out right now, so I can understand you, so I'll ask it now. I had a question about coax. I wanted to run a long run, and I wanted to use low-loss RG6 or some sort of cheaper 75-ohm coax to do it. Is there any way of matching it at both ends to 50 ohms, like putting a stub of, like put a PL259 connector on the RG6 and then put a stub of like RG58 on each end? Would that match it back to 50 ohms?
With the right kind of a stub, you can match anything. In other words, if I had a piece of 600-ohm transmission line and a piece of 20-ohm transmission line, and you give me the stub in the right place and the stub properly tuned, will that give you a perfect impedance match at one frequency at a time? Absolutely. However, got some good news for you. Unless you're doing moon bounce, where every quarter of a dB can make the difference between success and failure on a very threshold communication system, you don't have to worry about it. I have very often used 75-ohm transmission line. You're listening to a piece of 150-foot-long 75-ohm hard line right now. That's what I'm using. And how I got around the problem of a 50-ohm transmitter that I'm using and a 50-ohm antenna is I put a piece of scotch tape, I mean a piece of paper tape. These guys have heard this one a lot. I'm going to have some fun with you, Brandon. I put a piece of paper tape across the 75-ohm cable, and I wrote the word 50 ohms on it and made sure that the transmitter saw that, and there was no problem. But that's sort of a joke, but what's really going on, if you calculate the error of a 50-ohm antenna on a 75-ohm cable, the insertion loss is an extra 2/10 of a dB on one end, the antenna end, and on the transmitter end, you won't even get that much. It's a complicated such bunch of reasons, but lots of guys really worry about the fact, let me drop. They really worry about the fact that 75-ohm cable on a 50-ohm system, you don't have a perfect impedance match, and they think it's going to explode and catch on fire and burn up the transmitter and do all kinds of things. If you're lucky, the possibility exists that because your antenna has a 1.3 standing wave ratio, and ordinarily a 50 ohm transmission line, a 50 ohm antenna on a 75 ohm transmission line will give you something like a 1.3 or 1.5 standing wave ratio. The two might come out complementary if you're a little bit lucky, and there's ways to calculate that. So unless you're doing something very threshold, don't worry about it. Do it. It'll work like a charm. Now, depending on how long your feed line is, you said you got a long run. To me, a long run is on 2 meters and above, anything above 50 feet, you got to start worrying. RG6 is a pretty good cable. There are some lower loss cables than that, and some of them are free of charge. So that's your choice if you want to hear some further information on that, Brandon. KB1 THM K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Okay, so if I were to run like 50 feet of RG6 and put a PL259 connector on each end of it, and then get two stubs, maybe a foot long, of RG58 and put connectors on those, and put one stub on one end of the RG6 and another stub on the other end, and then have that one end of RG58 go to the antenna and the other end go to the transmitter. Would that work?
Believe it or not, Brandon, I think the answer is no. First of all, if you did it, from the description you've given me, I think it would make almost no change. The word stub really means that at the place on the transmission line where you add the stub, you're doing it by way of a T connector. You have a signal going straight through the T connector, and you've got the stub off to one side in parallel. And the T connector has got to be in the right place, and the stub has got to be the right length for it to make improvement. And if you get it wrong, you can fairly easily get a detriment instead of an improvement. My strongest recommendation is you start off by taking your 70 ohm cable, no matter what it is. Let me drop. Simply put your normal connector on each end of that cable. Make believe the cable is 50 ohms and just go and use it. Start off with what you've got and use it. It's not going to do any damage to anything. And the disadvantage of doing that is a couple of tenths of a decibel, an extremely small amount. If I had a well-calibrated S-meter on your receiver, and you look at your S-meter when I have a perfect impedance match with stubs on both ends, and then do the exact same experiment without the stubs, the difference on the deflection of your signal strength meter, your S meter, is probably equal to the width of the needle itself. You wouldn't be able to see it. You with your young eyes, you would see it. Me, I'm going to need a magnifying glass to see the difference. As you can see, the difference is extremely small. I recommend you don't put the stubs at first. Keep it simple. Just go and do it. It's going to work like a charm. And as you listen to the TechNet a little bit more and you hear the details of what's required to properly place and properly design the stub, and it's going to give you such a small amount of improvement that you add that later. Keep it simple. Go and do it. And then make the final refinement at some other time if you decide to get into some very difficult thing like moon bounce where you want to hear your own echoes and it's not Arecibo doing it. I recommend you keep it simple, Brandon, at first. And you can always add the elaboration later as an experiment. Wonder if that makes some sense to you. KB1 THM, K2RIW in the TechNet. Brandon, I wonder if you're there. Maybe the down repeater overpowered you. KB1 THM, K2RIW, are you there, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay, yeah. Now my second question, what kind of connector would fit on a piece of RG6?
Almost any connector you want. Yes, RG6, the easiest connector to put on there is a F connector. And there's two different kinds of F for Foxtrot, F connector. There's a kind of F connector made for RG59, which is also a 70 ohm cable. RG6 is a little bit fatter, a little bit lower in loss, but it's a slightly larger connector. It's in the bubble pack at Radio Shack. So one possible choice